Welcome to Launchpad, the unique radio show and podcast that celebrates new book releases and the authors that created them. Now, let's take off with your host, Grace Salmon.
This is Launchpad. Thank you for joining us for episode 41 with Anne Bancroft, Patty Eddington, Catherine Harrington, and Claudia Marseille. This is being filmed and taped in front of a live audience. We're so glad that you'll be able to join us today. On behalf of Mary Helen Sheriff and myself, we're just so happy to have these She Writes Press authors. She Writes Press is headed by the amazing Brooke Warner, and hopefully in just a little bit we'll also be joined by Anne Bancroft to talk about her novel today. In this episode, these authors have amazingly compelling stories. Their memoir, their fiction, but we have a story of a mother who fights to stay in the lives of her children, to an adopted daughter who finds that she questions everything when she finds a simple manila envelope, to a powerful tale of navigating both a hearing and a deaf world where the author was faced with love, loss, shame, and finding her true identity, to a novel that explores the dark and the darkly funny side of facing the unfinished business when you're faced with metastatic cancer. I am so glad to have these authors with us this afternoon and those who are joining us live in the Bookish Road Trip. Let's start with just a brief introduction by Anne Bancroft, who is having technical difficulties but hopes to join us in just a little bit. Her novel is called Almost Family, and we will be talking more about that in just a bit. Patty Eddington, The Girl with Three Birthdays, an adopted daughter's memoir of Tierra's tough truths and tall tales. Catherine Harrington with The Longest War, a psychotherapist experience of divorce, custody, and power. And last but not least, Claudia Marseille, But You Look So Normal, with her book there, which is fabulous, Lost and Found in the Hearing World. I'm so glad that you have your books. I'm so glad that each of you are joining us. Those of you who are joining us live, thank you. We're joined by USA Today bestseller Barbara Conry. Thank you for being with us, and there are others as well. Please make sure to add comments, add questions. And again, on behalf of Mary Helen Sheriff, the author marketing coach, and myself, welcome to Launchpad. Patty, let's start with you. Tell us about The Girl with Three Birthdays.
That is indeed the title of my memoir. I was adopted, always knew I was adopted, was told at such a young age that I have no memory of it, and never really asked many questions because I love my parents with all my heart and I couldn't think of hurting their feelings. I any natural curiosity I had, I just kind of pushed it down. Then when my daughter was getting married in 2017, she had experienced a lot of health issues and had a right to know genetically was there something going on. So she gave me a DNA test. And I dutifully did the test a year later because I guess I probably was still pushing it down, and got the results, and they gobsmacked me. Was within a couple days talking with a biological cousin who told me, she emailed me and she said, "Oh, Patty, I'm sitting here with tears streaming down my face. Your father asked us to try to find you before he died in 2012. She told me that my birth name was Marianne Lopez, and that essentially the whole Lopez family had been wondering whatever happened to Marianne her entire life. Within a couple weeks, I was at a quinceañera for my cousin's granddaughter, and I met a little elfin aunt, my Aunt Eva, who was sitting beside me and hugging me, and you know, couldn't believe she found baby Marianne. And she said, "Honey, you were living with us. We were going to adopt you. My father, Ramon's older sister, had interest in adopting me." And little Aunt Eva was living with her. She was 15 at the time. And she said, and then one day, Jane, the sister, the aunt, came into the room and she had you in a pretty dress and she had a bow in your hair. And I said, "Jane, where are you taking Mary? Where are you taking our baby?" And Jane said, "Well, today we go to see the judge, and when we come home tonight, Marianne will be ours forever and ever," she said, "and then we never saw you again." So that trauma that the family had experienced and not knowing led me to have my adoption records unsealed. And when I had them unsealed and got the results of what was in that manila envelope, that's what led me to write my book.
Wow. Very, very fascinating and compelling. And I want to talk more about as we move forward. Adoption is a very hot topic right now on all sides of the story. So hopefully we'll get more about that as well. Catherine, moving on to a different type of family trauma, your book, The Longest War, A Psychotherapist's Experience of Divorce, Custody, and Power. Tell us about it.
Well, for years and years, I knew I needed to write this memoir, but I tried first in 1999, but couldn't contain it. All I could do was cry. So I then spent another 17 years going to various kinds of therapists, practitioners, body workers, trying to heal. And then 2017 took it on again, and until now, it's taken that long to write it, revise it, get it published. The story is of how my ex-husband tried to make my children unavailable to me, make me disappear from their lives, and how I had to fight to stay in their lives. So we were in court off and on, I don't know, I think 8 times in 10 years. And it was just a continual fight. But I persevered. I mean, he did get custody of them because it seemed like that was the lesser of the evils presented to me. So then my challenge was to find a way to stay in their lives, whether they wanted me or not. And at points when they were sullen teenagers, they didn't want me. They didn't like me, didn't want to see me. So I said, you have to see me whether you like me or not. You're coming out for dinner tonight. And then it's the story of how I maintained a relationship. And ultimately, over time, they softened and made room for me, and here we are. I still can't talk about it without crying.
Well, very compelling and heartbreaking. And you were disappeared in an interesting way, as Patty was disappeared in different ways as well. Claudia, you have a compelling story, but you look so normal, lost and found in the hearing world. Tell us about your memoir.
Thanks, Grace. Well, first, I'm really honored to be with these other authors. I've read their books, and it's really compelling. And Catherine, I empathize with you. I have a different kind of disappearing, but there was a way that I was disappeared in my life. My memoir is about growing up with a very severe hearing loss at a time when hearing technology was still very primitive. By age 4, I had still not uttered a word. Finally, I got my first large and very primitive hearing aid and began to learn to lip read and speak with the help of 10 years of speech therapy. My parents chose to mainstream me, but they were traumatized refugees from Germany. My father was a disturbed psychoanalyst, and my mother was a Jewish survivor of the Holocaust. And because of their own stresses, they didn't advocate for me as much as they could have. As a child and through my young adulthood, I suffered often from isolation and loneliness, as I couldn't participate in so many social activities. There was so much I simply didn't understand. I wasn't able to socialize in the school cafeterias, which were noisy. I couldn't participate in slumber parties, as I couldn't read in the dark. I couldn't understand the TV, nor could I hear on the phone. This meant I missed out on so much social life. In my job as a young adult, using a phone was truly a nightmare, as so often I simply couldn't hear. I hid my hearing loss from my bosses and colleagues, as I didn't want to jeopardize my job. I finally found my way to my profession as a painter, which is compatible with a hearing loss. And then the last thing I want to say here is that in the past 30 years, there have been major advances in hearing aid and other technologies that have made a profound difference in my life and those others with hearing loss. Most people today simply aren't aware of all the changes that have occurred over the years. I cover all this and more in my story about the difficulties of living with a hearing loss, a challenging family life, and overcoming odds.
Well, I think each of you are incredibly fascinating. Each of your books sounds fascinating as well. Anne Bancroft, with her book, Almost Family, has not been able to join us. Anne tells us that her story is about a woman who would much rather die than ever go to any sort of support group until, of course, she gets diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. And her story, as I said, is both darkly and darkly funny. There's a group of the breast cancer survivors in the support group who call themselves the Mets, as in metastatic. And it is about very much finding out how to make your life very worthwhile towards the end of life, and how to address some of your unfinished business. I'm still hopeful she'll be able to join us, but if she cannot, Anne Bancroft is an easy name to remember. Please check out her book and her website as well. I want to go back to this idea of trauma within each of your books on both sides of the equation. And Patty, let's start with you to have discovered this, and you also referenced the trauma that your family, you know, your family of origin experienced. Let's talk a little bit about trauma from each of your perspectives.
You know, the interesting thing with my story is, if you would have asked me 5 years ago if I was traumatized, they would have said no. I was that good at not probably facing questions I should have faced a lot earlier in my life. But meeting the Lopez family and hearing their sad story. I don't want to bring everything down, but we are talking about trauma. My Aunt Jane, who had hoped to adopt me, had a nervous breakdown after she lost me. And that's another reason I felt really compelled to find out what happened at that courthouse that day. Why this family, who would have been loving and kind to me, you know, was not allowed to keep me in the family. There's probably one spoiler I can say is I never found out exactly. I did find out some things that I had suspected that weren't true. I was concerned about racism. I thought maybe a judge had looked at me and said, no, you may not live with your aunt. But my trauma kind of came around later in life, I think. And I will say that I think I'm doing okay. I think writing the book was cathartic. And I think things happen in life sometimes when they're supposed to, and maybe I would not have been able to deal with this earlier.
I would agree with you on that. Catherine, your children must have had trauma. You certainly, as you said, you know, you continue to well up when you talk about that. Why was it so important for you to write about trauma and work through that?
Because it was so confusing living through it. I mean, it was just, as I say in the book, the fog of war. I was just surviving day to day, and I could not, once the courts were over and the children had moved, I could not have told you the sequence of events. But I knew I needed to sort it out and find out what actually happened. So I spent a lot of time going through court records and letters. I was amazed how many letters I had. We communicated about everything via snail mail back then. So I knew about close requests, change of pickup time, and so forth. So I knew I needed to do it. And what I had not so clearly realized was how my own childhood trauma, I mean, Patty addresses that too, really played out. And I had no idea I was traumatized as a child. What my first therapist said, well, you have the signs of abuse. Were you abused? And I said, heavens no, of course not. Till the second therapist a few years later had the same question. I thought, maybe I should consider this. So I just, like all of us, we recapitulate our childhood issues in adulthood until we work them out. So it was just, I had to work through my childhood issues in order to solve being able to stand up for myself and my children.
You know, and I'm so glad that we have so many people joining us today. Please feel free to ask questions of these fabulous She Writes Press authors as well. Claudia, you had multiple levels of trauma, both in terms of the challenges you felt with your hearing loss, but also some difficult parents.
Yes, I think trauma is a underlying sub-theme in my memoir. And, you know, like the others, I didn't think I was traumatized. I'm very capable. I coped. And a lot of it was simply numbing over the repeated small traumas of being isolated, left out, not included, the pangs of not being able to do certain things that other people took so for granted. And there were just sort of like repeated wounds. So that was, and the writing of the memoir was very cathartic. And I think also now finding the words to speak it, because for the first 4 years of my life, I literally didn't speak. So now being able to speak my story to different audiences is good. And then I had heavy duty trauma on both sides of my parents. My mother was a Holocaust survivor, and my father had major tragedies in his life. And I can sense the kind of intergenerational epigenetic trauma that sort of resides in my body. So this is something I've been working out later in life. It's great to have this opportunity to do this before we die, to work out all of this trauma.
Which would be a theme of Anne Bancroft's book, too, about working things out before we die. I'd like to stay with this, since the three of you are memoirists. Why memoir? I always talk about when I write, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, it is the most naked thing I do. But I've never written memoir. Why did you each choose memoir? Patty, let's start with you.
I have tried to write fiction. I am horrible at writing fiction. I'm a journalist. I was trained in journalism, and I spent my entire career telling other people's stories. And where I really think what I love to do, and I hope I excelled at, was doing feature stories about people and things that happened to them in their life. So it was a natural for me. I didn't have the skill to do anything else. Telling stories was what I was okay at, and I just turned it around and told my own.
Great. Claudia, what about you? Why tell this story? Why memoir?
Well, you know, I started out writing poems and little vignettes and things, and then took, you know, several writing classes. And then people said, you know, you have enough material for a full-blown memoir. And it feels like I really wanted to tell my personal story. I didn't want the veil of a fictional character. And I have a lot of interesting vignettes of my parents' stories that are very interesting. And it just felt more honest and real to write about my story. And also part of the healing process for me was to be open and vulnerable and to come out of hiding and tell my story.
Oh, I like that it was part of the healing. Catherine, the same question. Why memoir? Why tell this story?
Because it's the only compelling story I have, because I needed to sort it out for myself. And it has been very, very healing, simply going back and actually understanding what happened. At the end of it, I admire myself, both for getting through it, for writing it, and have shed some shame. I mean, I talk in the book about I self-medicated by smoking pot, and I've always felt ashamed of that. And now I think, good heavens, girl, thank goodness you did that. I mean, you got through it. And you're still healthy and fine and not addicted to anything. Well, sugar a little bit. But anyway, I needed to do it.
And I think that's true, whether it's a fiction, a nonfiction, or memoir. When we have that story inside us, we are compelled. One of our listeners wants to know, have you authors made an extra effort to change your life because of your circumstances? Catherine, let's start with you.
Say that again, an extra effort.
Have you made an extra effort to change your life because of your circumstances?
Oh, it's been my organizing principle for my whole life. I mean, it has been my life. I mean, of spending my life in therapy, not in therapy, I mean, doing all kinds of things and really beginning to understand that my life, that I need to dig inside myself, be connected to the divine, and that's what my life is about.
Okay, Patty.
You know, this isn't going to be very formed. I think it's a great question. I just haven't thought of it before.
Sure.
The thing that comes to mind is, and it's in the book, is that at some point I told my daughter, Molly, something. And then I said, I probably shouldn't have said that to you. That's probably not something that, you know, my mom would have said to me. And she said, gosh, Mom, but you and I are so much closer than you and Grandma were. And I never thought of us as not close. I loved her. But she was from a different generation. My parents waited 17 years. My mother was 44 when I was born, 48 when the adoption was finally final, and almost, you know, 50 when I started kindergarten almost. And so she was of a different generation, the Greatest Generation. And there were just certain things I didn't ask and she didn't say. And so I think if anything, answering this off the fly, I think maybe I just changed without even thinking about it, that I wanted to have a different sort of relationship with my daughter.
Yeah. Claudia.
Well, I think I became an overachiever. I have parents with very high standards and expectations, and I always felt I had to overcome my disability and to hide it and not make it real, which is something I had to deal with later in life, that it is real. So I became an overachiever, did a lot of different jobs that were very difficult and not compatible with a severe hearing loss, especially at a time when technology was still primitive. So I finally found my way into the visual arts as a painter. And that was the way I really made changes in my life, is to come to grips with, this is something I can do, this is something I'm good at, and doesn't require, you know, major hearing efforts.
So finding your niche through part of this process.
Finding my niche, yeah.
I'd like to switch a little bit to the idea of family, because we've talked about that a little bit through each of your books. But family, I always say families are funny places. How does it feel to have straddled, Patty, in your world, multiple families? Catherine, in your world, not the family you thought you signed up for, certainly. And Claudia coming to grips with it. So I'd like to start with you, Patty. How does the theme of family play out in your life and then also in your memoir?
You know, so much. My parents, one of the reasons they had a hard time adapting was they were in a mixed marriage. My mother was Protestant, my father was Catholic. And so no one would help them adapt a child. And my father had a huge family. One sister had bunches of kids and they had bunches of kids. And then my mother had a smaller family, but I was around cousins constantly. And someone said, did they ever make you feel strange? And I'm like, never. They picked on me just as much as they picked on anybody. And then I have close relationships with many of my cousins. And then to find this family, and obviously I'm skipping over a whole family, and there's a good reason for that, but my biological mother's family, although I have nieces that are amazing, and a great nephew. My biological father's family, Ray, oh my goodness, the quinceañera, there's like 300 people there, all welcoming me. And I learned a lot of things. They said my biological father used to love to dance. And I said, I teach dance. And they're like, yeah, he couldn't dance. He loved it, but he couldn't. So it's fun to hear those stories. So family, I guess, is what my memoir is all about.
Catherine, you straddled a family that you didn't necessarily conceive of when you got married and had children.
That's true. I grew up in a family that just rather dysfunctional, although we looked very good on the surface. But my father's family had a real sense of family, and they saved my ass. My cousins took me in when I needed help. So I had that extended family that helped me. When we divorced, that was the biggest thing I lost in the divorce, was, quote, family with a capital F. So I made a real effort to create family around us with old friends that we'd known since the children were little. And we had traditions at Christmas and at Easter and at various other times, so that they always were part of our celebrations. My husband, when I sent out Christmas cards when we were first divorced, I made it, you know, my name and my children's name, family. And he said, you're not a family. And I thought, yes, we are. I can call us a family and we are a family. So that has been, losing family was the hardest part. Losing my ex-husband was not the hard part. And then as I also say, you know, I've remarried for now almost 30 years, and that's been a wonderful new blended family. So we've all landed in a good place.
That's good. Claudia, family, yesterday,
family
today.
Family is a big piece of my life because my family is incredibly small. I have no relatives on my father's side, absolutely none, and very, very few on my mother's side, who, because most of them were killed in Auschwitz and other places during the war. I have a brother who's 2 years younger than me, we were very close, and he acted as a kind of interface between me and the hearing world when we were children. and he learned to look at me and speak, and he was a real support person in my life. So I'm close to him, and I do have some small family that are important. But my family of origin, my mother was very disturbed and stressed, and my father was really out to lunch and moved back to Germany when I was 11. So I didn't have much family of origin, and I feel sad about that. And I feel sad that my family is so small. I don't have aunts, uncles, grandparents, cousins like so many people do.
Well, and in Patty's book, I'm not sorry, Patty's book, in Anne Bancroft's book, Almost Family, she talks about how, you know, we also create families. Catherine talked about that a little bit, you know, in her, in Anne Bancroft's book, Almost Family, she talks about how her support group became family in many, many ways. I'd like to switch now to the idea of who did you write your book for? Each of you sound like you wrote it certainly for yourselves, but also, who's the audience for your book? Patty?
I hope it comes across that I wrote my book for people who think maybe they will never be able to have a family. My parents tried for so long to adopt a child when they found out that mom wouldn't be able to have a biological child. And 17 years is a long time to have a dream. It was so easy. I decided at Christmas in 1992, I guess I'm ready. And I found out on Mother's Day that I was pregnant. And those months in between were so disappointing and hurtful. And I thought, oh my goodness, how could you carry this for that long? When my daughter, it seemed that she might have fertility issues, and then a good friend's daughter did. I wanted to write the book to show that family's where you find it. You might not find it where you think you will, but if you desperately want to become a parent, I think you can.
What a great message. And we're also joined by Bambi Rathman, who is a fabulous friend of Bookish Road Trip and runs some amazing groups on Facebook. So check out Bambi. Thank you for joining us. Catherine, the audience for your book.
Well, the limited audience would be people who are going through a divorce, to give them encouragement and hope that if you hang in there and persevere over a long time, things and behave yourself, which was hard to do, then things will come out okay. In a wider way, it's also for people, anybody who's going through difficult circumstances, to learn that no matter what the circumstance is outside yourself, it comes back to each of us, that we have to take care of, be responsible for our own behavior, our own actions, and try to use the difficulty to grow and expand and make the world a better place.
Excellent. Claudia.
Well, I was motivated to write this memoir because I have a lot of friends now who are getting hearing aids for age-related hearing loss. And they say to me, oh, now I know what it was like for you growing up. And as sympathetic as I am to anybody dealing with hearing aids and hearing loss and all of that, I know they don't know what it was like to have hearing loss from birth with primitive technology all their life. And so it was kind of, I wanted to, I think my audience ultimately is the general population of just letting them know what the deep impact of hearing loss is like. And then, as Catherine was saying, is more generally how one can overcome obstacles and live a creative and fulfilling life.
Well, I have found each of your books amazingly compelling. This particular episode has been a special joy for me. I think each of your stories is fascinating. I'm so sorry that Anne Bancroft, author of Almost Family novel, could not join us, but we have Patty Eddington with The Girl with Three Birthdays, and Now We Know Why. And her subtitle is An Adopted Daughter's Memoir of Tierra, Tough Truths and Tall Tales. Catherine Harrington, please hold up all of your books. The Longest War, A Psychotherapist's Experience of Divorce, Custody and Power, and Claudia Marseille, But You Look So Normal, Lost and Found in the Hearing World. Thank you for everybody who joined us today. Watch us in reruns on Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Thanks for being with us, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode is copyrighted by Grace Salmon and Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Thank you for visiting with us on Launchpad.